From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Predicting the Future with Paul Smith. He's the author of Reading the Enemy's Mind, an expert on remote viewing. And sometime this hour, we will have open lines for you. By the way, thank you to those of you in Cleveland listening to us on WTAM, the monster out of the Midwest. Keeping Coast to Coast, the highest rated program there. Thank you so much. And finally, a milestone for us, Washington, D.C., WMAL, number one there. And that's pretty important, if you know what I mean. Well, of the more than 6 billion people in the world, only 12 of them have ever set foot on the moon, providing them the very unique opportunity to peer at the Earth from hundreds of thousands of miles away. Now, for many, the experience appears to have changed them. The select group has returned to regular life and dispersed into a wide array of careers, spiritual, philosophical leanings, and apparent perceptions of the world they temporarily gazed at from space. One such person, NASA astronaut Edgar Mitchell, a member of the Apollo 14 mission that landed on the moon in 1971. He elaborated on his own fluid thoughts on the universe, arguing that alien visits to Earth have been covered up for more than 60 years. He was interviewed last week on a Britain radio station show, and that story went all over the world. But as Edgar Mitchell has emphasized time and time again, he's been saying this for years. As a matter of fact, in September of 2007, Dr. Mitchell said that very same thing on Coast to Coast AM. Well, just a few moments ago, I had an opportunity to talk with Dr. Edgar Mitchell about the confusion about this story. Edgar, you've been telling me this for years, that you have had some incredible sources who have told you that this planet has been visited, we're still being visited, yet it's all over the world right now. It's not really a new story, is it?
No, of course not. I've been telling that story as I had it confirmed for me for the last 10, almost 11 years, nothing really new about it.
And the important part about this is you have inside sources that have told you what specifically, Edgar?
Well, what I call the old-timers, and I've used these same words over again, the old-timers, that what I meant was the people that were local people involved with the so-called Roswell incident of 1947, plus following that, some of the military and intelligence people who were involved and were under strict security oath and don't talk commands and so forth, who, after I went to the moon, figured being a local boy and going to the moon seemed to enhance my credibility. So they wanted to talk to me about their experience in the case of the Roswell incident and told me their particular story, which said the essence of it was, yes, it was a real live spacecraft. They were foreign entities. There, some of them were dead, one was alive, and that they were involved and had been hushed up, and they wanted to get the story out before they passed on. And I was a credible person to carry it forward.
I've always told people that you're one of the most credible people I've ever talked to, so whatever you tell me, I take to the bank.
Well, I appreciate that.
And I assume that you have that feeling for some of your friends and sources, too, right?
Of course. That's true.
I've asked you this before, Edgar, but let's do it on the record again. When you were on your way to the moon, Apollo 14, when you landed on the moon, when you walked around on the moon, did Edgar Mitchell see anything that one would consider to be extraterrestrial?
Absolutely not. Not there, nor had any of my colleagues that had been to the moon before me, nor after, in spaceflight, had such an experience either.
Has this created?
We talked about that.
Has this episode, this recent episode that's gone worldwide now, has this created a problem for you or you and NASA or anything like that?
Well, the only problem for NASA was the fact that one of the persons that, or some reporter that listened to the radio show, interpreted my word "government cover-up" as a NASA cover-up, and NASA had nothing ever to do with any of this. So that created a little problem with NASA. They were upset. and kind of denied tracking UFOs, which, as far as I know, they never have either. But in other words, it made me look bad in NASA's eyes. But I think maybe we've squared that one away.
So you now have an opportunity talking to millions of people at this very moment. What does Edgar Mitchell feel about this entire issue?
Well, I'm surprised that at this point in time, although I think the professionals that have been agitating for disclosure for a long time can be very happy, I think I'm very surprised that all of a sudden, due to one radio show announcing the same thing I've been saying over and over and over, suddenly it explodes around the world as a global news story. Now, I suspect that the fact that Larry King has had a couple of programs in recent times that address the subject, that might have had something to do with it. But I was totally taken aback a week ago when my radio interview was suddenly picked up by, it seemingly, every press media, every press organization in the world. And my phone was absolutely, totally ringing off the hook, and my email box was totally jammed with requesting interviews and talks about this very thing that I've been talking about, as you say, for the past 10, 11 years.
So there you have it. Those are the words of Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell. This weekend, I had an opportunity to participate in the Mutual UFO Conference at San Jose, California. And, you know, I have always said I have never seen a UFO. Well, I think finally I had my opportunity this weekend and saw not one, but possibly two. A fellow by the name of Ed Grimsley. He's been on Coast to Coast before. He's a UFO researcher. His website, of course, is edgrimsley.com. He possesses night vision goggles and brought me to the top of this hotel room that we were all staying in at the conference. And I had an opportunity to look at the sky. And let me tell you something. First of all, with the naked eye, we only see a few stars up there. Through these goggles, there are millions and millions of stars up there, except two of them moved, and two of them moved in 90-degree angles. One of them even stopped, picked up, moved again, stopped, and then disappeared. The most incredible thing I have ever seen. There were a number of people up there who witnessed this. They, too, were looking through these night vision goggles. And I think if we ever get up to the Jim Gilliland Ranch, we will bring goggles like that. It was truly remarkable. I have no idea what I looked at. I know it wasn't satellites, because these satellites just keep going in one direction. They weren't meteorites, because they go by too quickly. You know, so I had to weigh, you know, maybe there's some moth 200 feet up there that looks like it up there through these vision goggles, but probably not. Whatever it was up there was under control of somebody, and I saw two of them. Absolutely remarkable. On the coasttocoastam.com website, under Hot Stories, aerospace engineers have been holed up in a Mojave Desert hangar for 4 years, fashioning a commercial spaceship to loft tourists some 62 miles above Earth. Now the wraps have partially come off the top-secret project. British billionaire Sir Richard Branson and American aerospace designer Burt Rutan showed off their mothership, which is designed to air launch a passenger-toting spaceship out of the atmosphere. The rollout, a year after a deadly accident at Rutan's test site, marks the start of a very rigorous flight test program that space tourism advocates hope will climax with the first suborbital joyrides by the end of the decade. And already, more than 250 people have paid $200,000 or put down deposits for a chance to float weightless into a mere 5 minutes. A very strange story out of the United Kingdom. The Telegraph newspaper is reporting that adventurer Steve Fawcett may have faked his own death. This is truly bizarre. Fawcett is a friend of Virgin boss Richard Branson, and the first man to fly nonstop around the Earth in a hot air balloon went missing last September when his final flight in a light plane over the Nevada desert went missing. They are quoting, and we're trying to get a hold of her, Lieutenant Colonel Cynthia Ryan of the U.S. Civil Air Patrol. They are quoting that she said Fawcett, whose body or plane was never found alive, could still be alive. She said, I've been doing this search and rescue for 14 years. Fawcett should have been found. It's not like we didn't have our eyes open. We found six other planes while we were looking for him. We're pretty good at what we do. Fawcett's disappearance sparked the biggest search in American history, with the Civil Air Patrol's Blackhawks, with infrared technology, joined with over 30 private planes looking for him. Already there is a crew looking for him now. Lieutenant Colonel Ryan believes Fawcett may have faked, and I want to find out from her if she said this, may have faked his own death due to what she says, personal problems or fears about his business dealings. There are also a number of abnormalities that question whether Fawcett's plane ever crashed. Truly a bizarre story. Another mid-air emergency has forced another Qantas jet to make an unscheduled landing, this time at the Adelaide Airport after a door opened during a flight to Melbourne. The door just popped open. You know, last week there was an oxygen canister that apparently blew up in the cargo bay, blowing up a small hole the size of a car. A national survey shows gas prices have dropped a fraction below the $4 a gallon mark. That's really a bargain now, isn't it? And you are driving less, according to the feds. The workers are leaving their cars at home and finding other ways to get to work. Americans drove nearly 10 billion miles fewer in May compared with a year earlier, according to the Federal Highway Administration. A Long Island man has been charged with driving drunk with his wife on the roof of their car, throwing her to the ground and seriously injuring her. She jumped on top of the car during an argument. He kept driving. She's now in critical condition. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has affirmed the major counts against former Border Patrol agents Ignacio Ramos and Jose Campion, reversing only a minor obstruction of justice count. They are serving 11 and 12-year sentences after a jury convicted them of violating federal gun laws and covering up the shooting of a drug smuggler. In a moment, Jerome Corsi will join us on that story. Intelligence officials are investigating reports that Al-Qaeda's top expert on chemical and biological weapons was among six people killed in a missile strike on Pakistan's tribal areas. Robert Novak, the syndicated columnist that we talked about last week, who hit a pedestrian with his car, has now been diagnosed with a brain tumor and was admitted to a Boston hospital. Kelsey Grammer, who had a heart attack last month, the actor from Cheers and Frasier, was hospitalized in New York. He was feeling faint. 2 months ago, he had a mild heart attack in Hawaii, where he lives while paddle boating with his wife, Camilla. An Internal Revenue Service employee in Kentucky has pleaded guilty to improperly accessing the IRS accounts of celebrities and sports figures. The 57-year-old man entered the plea to a misdemeanor charge. He was apparently peeking in on 200 celebrities, including Kevin Bacon, Alec Baldwin, Sally Field, Chevy Chase, Randy Quaid, and some Cincinnati Reds baseball players. A 56-year-old man in the United States has been arrested after shooting his lawnmower because it wouldn't start. He simply says, I can do it. It's my lawnmower. I'll shoot it if I want to. And Dark Knight breaks a record over the weekend now. Second week at number one, passing the $300 million mark. And also, go look at the feature article story at coasttocoastam.com. A woman and her mother, picking berries in Ontario, Canada, encountered what they say was an unknown 8-foot-tall creature. They later returned to the site and found a large footprint with six toes. We've got a picture of the footprint. Go take a look at it at coasttocoastam.com. And here he is, author, researcher, also writes column for WorldNet Daily, Jerry Corsi, with us to talk about this case of Ramos and Campion, their convictions affirmed by the Court of Appeals. It's got to be very disappointing news to them and their families, Jerry, huh?
Yes, George, it was devastating. I spoke with Joe Loya, who is the father-in-law for Agent Ramos, Ignacio Ramos. And Joe Loya said the families were devastated. I mean, this news that Ramos and Campion, the two Border Patrol agents who fired after a fleeing drug smuggler, Aldrete Davila, brought 750 pounds of marijuana across the border in an incident in February 2005. They're going to evidently stay in prison, according to this decision, unless it's reversed by the Supreme Court now, for a mandatory 10-year minimum sentence, which was imposed for violating U.S. Section 924C, which involves committing a felony while using a felony, using a firearm. And, George, I think the travesty of this case, I interviewed today and reported on WorldNet Daily Congressman Ted Poe from Texas, a Republican congressman, and Ted Poe said that Congress never intended the Section 924C to be applied to law enforcement officers, and Congress is now going to have to reconsider revising that statute to make it clear that this kind of case should never happen.
And this this drug dealer who fled back to Mexico, who then testified for the prosecution against Compion and Ramos, then came back later and was arrested on another drug charge, wasn't he?
That's correct, George. Aldrete de Vila had a immunity from Johnny Sutton, the prosecutor, and a border pass card from the Department of Homeland Security. And before the Ramos and Compion trial started, Aldrete de Vila brought a second load, another 750 pounds of marijuana across the border, a second drug smuggling incident. Johnny Sutton hid that evidence. When it surfaced at trial, the prosecutors asked the judge, and the judge agreed to seal the evidence. So the Ramos and Compion court never heard about the second load. And Aldrete de Vila testified that he was just an innocent victim who was doing this one incident because he lost his commercial driver's license in Mexico, and his mother was sick, and he couldn't afford to buy the medicine. The prosecutors allowed Aldrete de Vila to lie on the stand, and they knew it. The whole case is really a disgraceful case. And, George, we're putting $400 million in the Merida initiative now down to Mexico to help Mexico's military fight the drug war. It makes no sense at all that the Bush administration and our courts are backing law enforcement off the border. With this Ramos and Compion decision affirming the convictions today, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans, it means that law enforcement officers on the border are going to be afraid to use their weapons, even if they're encountering a drug smuggler who they fear might cause, you know, threat to their lives. They're still going to be at risk if they use their weapons.
There will be some, Jerry, who say, look, they got convicted in court, and then they've had their convictions affirmed by a court of appeals. Hey, you know, it's the law of the land. What do we say about that?
Well, George, it does. The case, Ramos and Compion's conviction being affirmed by the court of appeals, reminds everyone, and should, how difficult it is once you're convicted at a court. The primary court convicts you of a criminal offense. You've got a very, very steep hill to climb to get any appellate court to reverse the decision. And this, you know, Ramos and Compion are likely not to get this conviction overturned, even by the Supreme Court. It's not sure the Supreme Court would even hear the case. But when you step back and look at what happened here, two law enforcement agents shooting after a fleeing drug smuggler, and the law enforcement agents are now in prison for 10 to 12 years each for using their weapons in the incident. When law enforcement officers testified, they thought their lives were at risk. I mean, the case is a travesty. The courts are listening to and siding with the drug offender, Aldrete de Vila, who's now in federal prison for a second offense that he committed before the Ramos and Compion trial started.
Well, Jerry, all I know is this is a very disappointing case for the family. And I would guess George Bush, if he really wanted to do something on his way out of office, should commute their sentences.
Well, George, I would certainly hope that your words are heard in the White House, and we're going to make every effort to get the president to listen. I've myself spoken with very high people in the administration. The George Bush administration at the very top has been dug in on this case, saying that Ramos and Compion are rogue law enforcement Border Patrol agents who deserve this punishment. But I think, you know, across the country, our hearts have to go out to two law enforcement officers trying to stop drug smugglers, and now a clearly criminal drug smuggler, Aldrete de Vila, from coming into the United States. And it's a travesty to have good law enforcement officers punished this way, especially when Congress wants to change the key statute which gave them the 10-year mandatory sentence.
Truly a sad story. Jerry, we'll be talking with you in the not-too-distant future, I'm sure.
I look forward to it, George. Thank you very much. Great honor and pleasure to be back with you.
That's Jerry Corsi. Now, I'll be back in a moment with Open Lines. Just you and me. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And the wildcard line is 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Yes. We're going to be back in a moment with Open Lines for the rest of this hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, and we're going to start again the new testing of this water for gas device and see if Tom can get any more higher mileage from his car. So what he's going to do is wipe the slate clean. He's going to shut off the unit. He's going to fill up his car again, and we're going to record his mileage without the unit on. And then we're going to do it again, same pump, fill it up, turn the unit on, and see what he gets. At this point, he got a little less than his regular car without the unit on a few weeks ago. So we're going to try it one more time and see how we do. Dr. Roger Lear, whom I had seen this weekend at the conference in San Jose, has put another little device on his unit because he tried this too, and his mileage went down. He has seen a 38% increase now, a huge jump. So he wants to install that on Tom's car. And I said, Dr. Roger Lear, who's an expert in alien implants and taking them out of people, I said, now you're putting things in. Let's go to the phones. Marilyn in Florida, you're a first-time caller, and you're on the air. Hi, Marilyn.
George, it's so great to talk to you.
Thank you.
I've got so many things I'd love to talk to you for, and I know my time is short.
Well, take your best one.
Okay, 1111. That's always bothered you a little bit, and you wondered what it was. There is a very large club all over the world of 1111 groups, and I'm surprised more people haven't called you. It is a group that there's 11 doors to be opened, and they believe that the world will be changing in 2011.
Where do we find these doors, Marilyn?
Well, the doors are opened. They have opened several, and what it is, it's doors, but it'll help to open up the brain to spirituality.
Do we all have to open them up by ourselves?
No, it's done for us.
Oh, really?
And that's what this group from all over are doing. And I mean, there's thousands of people in this group.
What's behind the last door?
Well, that's what I want to tell you about, because you seem to have a little fear about the end of the world.
No, I'm not. I kind of think we're going to be okay through a rough spot.
And see, and this is what they believe. They believe by their spirituality and by their all the things they do, and I won't go into all of that, but that they, when the last door is opened, that it will be a whole different world. Our brains are opening slowly and much more than they used to be. And we are all more spiritual than we used to be. I mean, look at your station. People are saying they see so many things that people never used to be able to see. Well, this is all part of the 1111 group. And that by the time that the last door is open, that there will be a change of people. We will be in terrible, dire need of a change.
Mm-hmm.
Because we will be in a world war, so they have said. And many things will be, there will be many floods and such things as that. And of course, Casey's map of the flood that affects
the withered away North America.
Mm-hmm.
And you think all this is going to happen within the next 3 years, I guess, huh?
Right around there, yes. So that's what, this was like in 89, 90, 91.
I'll tell you what, Marilyn, why don't you email me some information on this group? I'd like to read up on them, if you would. Okay? Thanks. Wildcard line, Donald in Virginia. Hey, Donald.
Hey, George.
Welcome.
My father just recently died on July the 18th, and it was due to they call it a staph infection. Well, it must have been the hospital staff or the nursing home staff, because a nurse had put the catheter in the wrong place, and when they pulled it out, it set an infection. He was a double amputee, and he was susceptible to getting gangrene. Now, you know, it was like the nursing home is supposed to take care of them elderly patients, right?
Yep.
My father was 75 years old. He'd never seen his two grandchildren by my ex-wife and my daughter that's 2 years old. I'm 49, and I have a two-year-old daughter, and he's never seen her. He's seen pictures of her, but, you know, the thing is, my point is, where can we get this settled? And it's like I have a friend that was in, I deliver fuel to a person, and it's like he had a father that was 30 years Navy veteran.
Mm-hmm.
President of the United States sent a letter. Hey, thanks for your father's service, and now the government doesn't have to pay for that. But where do we get where we can get these nursing homes to be more careful of, dealing with the patients? And you know, it should be more or less governed, not just the...
Well, and also, Don, the hospitals, too, as you pointed out, because these staph infections that people get when they go into hospitals or in these nursing homes in some cases are pretty widespread. And it's very unfortunate that this happened to your father. And it's sad because, you know, you go into a hospital expecting to at least get better. And in many cases, you get worse or you don't come out at all. It is a big problem. And I really don't know if the government's doing anything about it to try to fix it. And I'm not sure hospitals can fix it. This is a pretty tough strain, this infection. And it's very, very dangerous. Let's go to you, Deborah, in Wisconsin, east of the Rockies. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to address, ask earnestly for American citizens to flood Pennsylvania Avenue with letters to President Bush before he leaves office to turn around this travesty on these two men.
On Ramos and Compton, and that's not a bad idea, Deborah.
It's absolutely outrageous.
I mean, here are two guys doing their job. Their lives are always at stake. And they, you know, they did what they thought was right. And, you know, they may have fudged a few things out there, but my gosh, to be in jail for 10, 11 years, that's crazy.
It's our moral obligation, George.
I know.
To stand up for these men.
Absolutely.
It really is.
Absolutely. And it would be a message that he could send the president if he commuted their sentence. I just don't know if he's going to do that.
Well, we've commuted less desirable people.
Tell me, a past president sure have.
So.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, it's going to be interesting because traditionally every president, as they leave office, commutes sentences of a lot of people. And she is right. Most of those people have done far worse than Ramos and Compion. Let's go next to our next wild card line, but we're going to Canada. Roger, hi.
Hi, George. I'm calling you from London, Ontario, Canada.
Yes, you are. Where you almost had a Bigfoot there. Close.
We did?
Close. Yeah, pretty close.
Hey. That'd make a great show topic.
Yeah, it would.
Anyway, Hayes, I wanted to ask you, in 2009, you guys are going to be switching over to digital for all TV sets in the States there. We'll probably follow suit in Canada, you know, somewhere down the line.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to ask you, like, what if the radio industry follows suit and switches over to digital? Because I've been hearing rumblings that AM is dying, and you know, just wanted to get your take on that and see if the radio industry switches to digital.
Well, they are switching right now.
It
hasn't gone massive, but most stations are switching with high fidelity and digital. It's happening. It's happening now. TV was the most extreme because in some cases, people's televisions won't work after 2009 in some cases.
Right. What about the AM band? Like, if everybody in radio switched over to digital, is that going to affect AM?
I don't think so. I think it would just continue to keep radio strong, honestly.
Like, could AM go to digital as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In some cases, it's already happening. So,
oh, that's good news. Then you guys are going to be on for a long time then.
We'll always be on. Never worry about that. Let's go to Sherry in Georgia. You're up with us. Hi, Sherry.
Good evening. I just had this very weird experience earlier this month with actually listening to you, George.
What happened?
Well, I have a stream link because normally I'm not up this late in the evening, but I was blessed tonight to be able to be.
You get the podcast in the morning, huh?
Yep. I listen to it whenever.
That's cool.
And that's one of our things we do. Anyway, the evening that you had Brooks Agnew on, talking about the Hollow Earth and the Earth changes and stuff, and I'd met Brooks at James Gill Land's Ranch, so I was familiar with him, and I was just listening, and he was talking about all these different things. We started talking about the Hollow Earth theory and these different things to do with the crust and the inner core, and my brain just started coming up with this extremely elaborate theory about the Earth. And without going into a long explanation,
give me the short version.
Short version?
Yeah.
Okay. This has to do with the fact is that most people that talk about anti-gravity and things to do with propulsion, he made the mention that the outside of the Earth's crust rotates in a clockwise direction and the inner Earth rotates in a counterclockwise direction, according to Hollow Earth theory.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happened, my brain went, whoa. This has got something to do with anti-gravity. Anti-gravity's always got something to do. People talk about things moving in two different directions and making a magnetic field. My brain goes, wait a minute. It's like maybe this Earth is a spaceship for real that's just waiting until it needs to be moved. And all these elaborate ideas started coming into my head of all these different things that I've read for so many years and just kept coming and coming. So the next day we were listening to the Streamlink again from the previous night when you had open lines and random callers. And a gentleman that called in and talked about when he was 14 years old and he was fishing and the man came up to him and told him he was from Planet X.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then what did he say? He says, you'll hear about Planet X in the future, but don't believe them when they tell you it's a planet. Planet X is a spaceship. And I went, what? You know, I couldn't believe it. It's just like, anyway, I have all these elaborate things about propulsion and stuff that come into my head.
Well, I tell you what, you're allowed a phone call once a month. So once a month, call us with one of your new thoughts and theories.
Okay.
All right. You can do that. Tom keeps a record of everybody and remembers everyone's voice who has called this program. Actually, some people have gotten in the next day. Next up, Josh in Illinois. Welcome to the program. Hey, Josh.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I know I didn't get much time. I just got a real quick question.
Sure.
I've been listening to the show for a long time. Big fan.
Thank you.
I know you guys study a lot of mysteries, a lot of unexplained phenomena.
We live for mysteries, Josh.
Oh, yeah, I know. I hear you every night, man. And I was just seeing, I never heard a show you guys are doing about Tupac Shakur. I don't know if you know too much about him, but there's a lot of mystery involved in his life.
No, but I tell you, we have mentioned him a little bit with a friend of ours who comes on the air every once in a while, R. Gary Patterson, whenever we talk about strange mysteries and what happened to some performers, rock stars, rappers, and things like that. We've never done a whole show on him, but we've mentioned little things.
I was just going to bring it to your attention. I didn't know,
It is a strange story. Strange story about a lot of those guys, how they died or got killed.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, yeah, that some people think he's still alive. I don't know. I think he's dead. I think the Stephen Fawcett story is bizarre. Truly bizarre. Apparently, there was a huge multi-million dollar Lloyd's of London insurance policy on him, too. I mean, millions of dollars. It's weird, and an investigator apparently for Lloyd's of London thinks the whole story is weird. They haven't found the plane, and it was almost the plane they thought was made out of wood and fabric and was almost biodegradable, and they found that to be weird, too. The whole thing is weird, but we're going to continue to follow up on that. And like I mentioned, there is a great group of trackers out there now looking for the crash or the remains of Stephen Fawcett, if they're there. But everybody's baffled by this one. Bob in Chicago, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hey, Bob.
Thanks, George.
Sure.
George, a comment and a quick question.
Okay.
The comment is, if people want to call into Congress to get leave a message with the president, there's a toll-free number they can call regarding Ramos and Compion.
Is there? You can give that out if you have it.
Sure, I have it. It's 866-220-0044. That's the line to Congress, and they can give the either connect the person to the president's hotline or give them the other number.
Not that any elected official has ever cared what we feel.
Right. But maybe if he gets enough people calling, maybe something could be done about this. And my question is, George, could you go over that story again where that deputy had Bigfoot, or he shot Bigfoot and said he had the body?
Oh, yeah, that's a story we had last week, and it had to do with a Clayton County police officer in Georgia. And he claims that he has the body of a Bigfoot, and he's keeping it on ice. We had a Bigfoot tracker expert on, and he doesn't believe the case at all. Tom has called the police department a couple times. We haven't been able to hook up with the police officer. We're not going to give it up. And one of the problems, according to the Bigfoot guy who was on our show, Matt Moneymaker, was that the police officer and his partner, former corrections officer, charged like $499 for expedition tours.
Okay.
And, you know, he's thinking, is this just a little ploy to get people to go on their expedition? Look, if he's got a Bigfoot, he owes it to the world to show it to us.
Right.
And not to keep it in a bag somewhere.
You're right, George. Okay, George, thanks a lot. Have
okay,
a good
Bob. East of the Rockies, your turn, Rob, in Baltimore. Take it away.
Hey, George, how you doing
good
tonight? Yeah, the Bigfoot story's a myth. We're going to find out in years to come that Steve Fawcett is alive. But what I called you about, your night vision experience.
Yeah.
A couple questions for you. How many lights were around on top of this hotel you were on?
There were some lights, but not a lot. It was pretty dark looking up there. I mean, I was amazed, Rob, at just looking into the sky with my eyes. And you could see a couple planets and some stars. And then when you put these goggles on, man, they were all over the place.
Yeah. Do you have any idea what generation goggles they were, from 1 to 3?
It was 3, because they tell me there's a newer one coming out, a 4th generation, which he doesn't have. Ed Grimsley does not have that, but he said his were 3 generations.
Yeah, those are the best out there right now. I only have a generation 1. I've had them for almost 10 years.
Now, do you see a lot of stars when you point the goggles up there in the sky at night?
Yeah, I see a few more than normal, but you know they're the lowest quality that you can get.
Okay, have you ever
with the infrared? But
have you ever seen anything moving around up there?
I thought I did once, but it turned out they were moths.
Oh, now what did the moth look like to you through that thing?
You know, I thought for a second I was seeing something real. Well, obviously it was real, but I thought I was seeing something much, much higher.
Because it's out of focus, right?
Oh, a little bit. You know, I got from like 10 feet to infinity. I got a double focus front
okay.
and rear. But
it didn't look like a moth, though, to you, did it?
No, it just looked like it looked like a large star. And it was moving, but it was not making 90-degree angles. And then I took the goggles away from my face and realized that they were moths flying around lights. I haven't actually taken them out to the country yet.
Yeah, you've got to do that. And if you ever get a higher generation one, I think you'll be surprised and shocked at what you see up there. Roger Lear was telling me that he and a group of people saw 2 objects converge and then almost like go into a mothership, and then they came out again. And he said that was a remarkable story, and he saw that with the naked eye. So it is just truly amazing what people see. Donna in Louisiana, 35 seconds for you, Donna. That's all I have.
Hi, George. Hi. How are you?
Good. Now you have
Great.
30.
Okay.
29.
Whenever you went to the break, I went outside with my night vision binoculars. I was looking up at the sky because I always see strange things.
What'd you see?
And this huge something, a ship, just flew. I mean, flew like in the blink of an eye, obliterated my vision.
I know.
Through the binoculars.
It's truly remarkable. Ed Grimsley thinks that there's a war up there between ETs. I don't know if that's the case, but I'll tell you, I saw 2 very strange objects that night in San Jose.